coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I believe it's been a whirlwind leading up to 250, but I believe we're on, Cole, you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, 244? Am I correct?
I believe that is right. Yes. Yes, indeed.
All right. I am, as always, Andrew Farmer with me, as always.
Yes, 244.
Confused. My Vulcan, I have a blood debt.
I am the pawn to your far.
We have mind melded many times.
That's right.
The Jedi Cole Houston.
I love your Spock. The children.
You are the sash to my mirror, mirror Sulu. And we are blessed tonight. The gods of hard science fiction have graced us tonight with the lovely and talented Mrs. Jedi Cole Houston.
Oh wow! Hey, Catherine. That's me! Yay!
Catherine Houston, Catherine, thank you for joining us tonight.
Oh, it's always fun.
Oh man, Cole, this was a good pick. So what do we do? What are we talking about tonight? Let some people know.
Well, the thing about it is, on the air date of this issue, which I believe is 9/8/2017.
Correct.
Star date, however they reconfigured.
I tried to figure out star dates before we did this show, and I gave up.
I think, Catherine, didn't you tell me one time that like there was really no consistency early on? They would just like fart out a name, whatever the guy who wrote.
Oh yeah,
like DC Fontana's star dates.
And what's called in the classic series, they just the star dates were totally random. There was no logic to them because
some of them had like seven digits, some of them had 26 star date. 4/3/7/4.
And
8/6/7/9/2/05.
If you want me to get nerdy on you,
please.
The reason wasn't any kind of retro history people try to pry bar into it. It was the fact that all the episodes were written by different people and that it was just a space show and like anybody was ever going to keep track of that kind of thing. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's not like, I mean,
and
people would have.
That's the reason why it's like that.
People would have had a fit if, like, you know, the wrong president was mentioned on an episode of Bonanza. For the time period, you know, but
well, they never. I don't think they ever took into consideration the internet because pre-internet, you had people like, you know, even to the point where next generation. This is completely. We are already derailed, but that's fine. I want to do this. We had people like me and my friend Mike Greniger in high school. I was the Star Wars guy, and Mike was the Star Trek guy, and I think. You know, the three of us have talked about Star Trek in a previous incarnation of a podcast, along with Rick during United States of Geekdom, I believe.
I believe you're right. Yes.
Yeah.
But you know, he would sit and you know he had a handwritten log of of star dates from episodes of Next Generation. So
Next Generation. They were consistent.
Okay.
They decided to be consistent because you're talking about keeping track of stuff. Star Trek fans were and I'll go to the mat on people with this, were one of the originators of the concept of gathering together for conventions.
Well, they absolutely
were. They did some of the earliest conventions, and so. The show itself couldn't have possibly imagined that people would actually get together for one specific show just for the sake of hair splitting.
No other good purpose whatsoever.
But Roddenberry imagine the cell phone. He can imagine the transporter, replicator, medical bays. Huh? You know, what was it that they said in Free Enterprise about Irwin?
You
take Yeah, what was the name of the ship in, was it 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea?
Oh, yeah. Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Yeah, it's like, you take the submarine, you put it in space, it's complete ripoff. Yeah.
It's complete ripoff.
Well, Arthur Allen is king. He's a god.
The disk drive?
Yeah, but you can't imagine the internet, and you can't imagine that you're going to have fans, you know, 75 years in the future, like, I'm sorry, but you're the star date. So, Cole, what are we talking
about? Well, he couldn't imagine William Shatner going, get a life.
That
is probably one thing that he could imagine.
He didn't have to imagine it, because I'm sure that Shatner told him on a day, the daily basis, to get a life. Roddenberry, get a life.
How many fingers am I holding up?
Send Margelle to my trailer.
Wow, my God. That's his wife.
Well, she wasn't initially.
Yeah, but we're also talking about Shatner here. Let's be honest.
But he was doing like a Braveheart.
Right.
He was smoking. As star of the show, I get first night.
Corpus Noctis, asshole.
I'm not Scottish. But
what does this have to do with comics?
Nothing. Cool.
Yeah, nothing at all. But what this does have to do with comics is today, as you're listening to this on the 9th of September, that was also September 9, 51 years ago today.
Woo-hoo!
Star Trek appeared on NBC in living color over most of these stations. And a little something changed in the American vernacular.
Yes.
Didn't quite catch at full, but something definitely happened. And one of the things that did happen 51 years ago was the fodder for comic books almost from the jumping off.
Right. Right. So tonight we do due deference to.
You said doo-doo.
Doo-doo. We do deference to the legacy of Star Trek by talking about their involvement in the comic books. And there's a lot to talk about. There are a lot of incarnations. It's pretty much run consistently from when Gold Key started this business back in 67 all the way through today.
And what's amazing is I was aware of Gold Key's comic books, and I didn't realize that between 67 and 79, they only published 61 issues.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it wasn't just a nonstop run of Star Trek, but they did bring the characters and the situations and the Enterprise and crew into the printed page for the first time.
What's really interesting when we start getting into this, like when we start looking at Gold Key, was what they did was I'm not going to say they weren't allowed to extrapolate on what had happened in the show or what was happening in the show, but it was pretty much cookie cutter sci-fi with a Star Trek kind of coat of paint. Oh, you know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It was Star Trek flavored.
The artists,
exactly.
The main artists of the show had never even seen the show. They were going. They were basing the likenesses on production stills, and that was it.
Of which there are probably like 10
at that point. Right. He had no production. He had no production stills of Doohan, so he doesn't look anything. Anything like Scotty in the Gold Keys. They had some cool stuff towards the end of the run, and they brought in some amazing writers, which guys like Kazdan, Drake, and Len Wein got a run on it. But still, for the most part, they were not Star Trek comics. At one point, Kirk commits genocide. In these comic books. They had no idea what the show was. They had no idea what the show was about. They were like, hey boy, get in there and make me a Star Trek comic. And he's like, yeah, and, you know, and ran in and wrote up some kind of, you know, overarching sci-fi stuff and went to town with it. It was, yeah.
And some of this, in like one panel I found, it looks like Kirk has an afro.
Yeah, yeah. Kirk, there's so many. And I bought, you know, side note, I was at Half Price Books, and I sent this to Cole, I think. I was going through their stuff, and I saw one of the collections of the Gold Key Star Trek comics. I'm like, well, this would be cool. You know, I would like to have this anyway. Plus, we're getting ready to do a show. This would be a really good
reference.
Great
timing.
I grabbed it. It's Italian. So I got to brush up on my Italian a little bit. Not too much in figuring out the show, but that gives you a breadth and scope of how far this has gone. You know, that you can pick up these comics from, like, 71 in Italian in collected form from Gold Key, who hasn't been around for, you know, who knows how long. But God bless
him. Yeah, easily decades.
But God bless him for doing it. The thing... I don't know if I talked about this, and, you know...
I want to point out, Scotty looks like Hitler.
funny you should say that.
It's kind of weird that apparently, without any reference material, they just made him look... The go-to in comics was Hitler.
It's funny that an Italian artist in the late 60s would go straight to Hitler. It's funny. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying, all right?
Well.
My favorite thing about this period, and, you know, Gold Key, and then the next thing we'll talk about is the Marvel books, which had their own problems, which are really interesting. But my favorite thing about the TV show, comic books, anything that involves James Tiberius Kirk, is I can only imagine what the first meeting with Kirk and, you know, the head of the Federation is before he got his 5-year mission, where he's sitting there, he's like, now this is an exploratory mission. You know the prime directive. You go out there and explore. And Kirk's like, yeah, and then fix things, right? No. Just go. You see it. You're gonna see it. You're gonna report it. You're gonna record it. And then, yeah, but what? But then I'm gonna fix it. No, Kirk, stop, Jimmy, stop. Let's say, like, I found Hitler. Wouldn't you want me to fix that? How in the world could that ever happen? I'm just saying. So that's from my one man show, Kirk Finds Hitler. It's opening in 3 weeks.
Finding Hitler, the Kirk story.
Finding Hitler, the James Tiberius Kirk story. No, but yeah, Gold Key, you know, and it is what it is. And Cole, maybe you can comment more on this than I can, being a little more of the historian than I am. But I felt like Gold Key kind of did that with a lot of their licenses.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny you mentioned the kind of plug-in
yes.
sci-fi story. Because a lot of Gold Key Star Trek comics, if you go, you know, you really can't judge a book by its cover unless it's a comic book, at least prior to the last 20 years. Now you can't even tell anything from the cover because they're too terrified to be called down on the cover not conveying properly what's going on inside. But they alternate between, over the many, many years, their covers alternate between like photo covers where it's just a collage of stills that they were provided for reference.
Sure.
And as I looked over them, I noticed there was not a single photo collage with Scotty.
That explains it. He's a vampire, right? Like, yeah. Jimmy Doohan is a vampire.
And then the other thing they would do were often these painted covers that looked like pulp sci-fi. Beautiful. They just happen to have Kirk and Spock in the painting that otherwise could have been lifted off the cover of, you know, Captain Falcon and the Mystery Brigade or something like that.
You're looking
I think they just got some pulp artists to do a standard issue shock and awe cover and put these two guys in it.
Yeah. Or they would call them and say, do you have any unsold sci-fi covers?
Right.
Could
right.
you repaint the hero to look like this?
It's like those
I would say that they would just send us some color forms out. It's just like...
It's like the people that go to thrift stores.
If you know what color forms are.
But you're right, though. You could easily have taken, Korak, Son of Tarzan, or Planet of the Apes, or any other cover, Solar Man of the Atom,
yes,
and just painted over and made it into a Star Trek cover instead.
But they're gorgeous covers. I mean,
yes,
they're
beautiful,
but they aren't Star Trek. Like,
yeah.
So let's move this along to talk about Marvel's. Well, you know what? Before we get into Marvel, there were a couple things that I had no idea about, which were between 69 and 73, there were British comic strips that were.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I had no idea that Joe 90, Top Secret, TV21, and Valiant were running Star Trek comic strips in their publications, which is pretty cool. Also had no idea that Peter Pan. Well, no, I did know, but I didn't know there were comic books associated that Peter Pan Records released Star Trek stories with comic books that accompanied those stories.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I had no idea about that, but Marvel. Oh, poor, this is sad. So Marvel picks up the licensing rights in 79. And they're like, all right, we got this. We can put out Star Trek's become a big hit. 79. When did the they started with an adaptation of the motion picture?
Yeah, very often that was their MO. If they were going to pick up a license, they would do an adaptation to kind of test the waters, or at least, you know, muddy them a bit.
Yeah, because what happened is, they were going to be able to do the second, what was known as Star Trek Phase 2, which is the second five-year voyage of the Star Trek Enterprise in its mission to discover and screw up alien life forms everywhere.
and impregnate.
And fix things. We're going to fix it. But they could only use the characters and likenesses from the movie, and couldn't use anybody from the original series otherwise. So they were kind of stuck for 18 issues until 81 because they couldn't do anything else. They were just like, all right, we got Bald Chick over here. We've got
yeah, Ilea got a lot of mileage.
Yeah, we got Perm Kirk over here. My favorite Perm Kirk. Did you like the movie, Catherine?
The first one?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Okay, fair enough.
That's all right. You're not obliged to like it.
I didn't either. Which begs the question, right? Catherine, would you have been willing to read 18 comic books based on it?
I did not purchase the comic books. The reason, this is my own hang up, so feel free not to have it yourself. But in the early days when there was other than the classic series, all there were the pulp novels.
Yes.
All the novels were always every single novel was Star Trek, but with the guy who wrote the novel in it as some minor character who saves the day.
It's true of any kind of things
it's basement fantasies put into print, sent off to the publisher.
Yeah, so many licensed type
the comics
things like
came
that.
Along, this... I'm like. No, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Star Trek was notorious for that, but and later things like Star Wars and other properties, where you could tell so much of the author sort of insinuating themselves into, like, you know, here's lowly yeoman, you know, and usually an anagram of their own name.
That's so sad.
He's tired because during the day he has to work for Scotty all day because he's a genius engineer, and at night he just can't get any sleep because he's bedding all of the hot chicks.
I mean, it's a tough life. It's a tough life.
We're not talking Kirk castoffs. We're talking the women that chose him over Kirk.
That's right.
So we're just getting the diary of this guy. Like, right after dinner, I Greco-Roman freestyle wrestled James T. Kirk to a standstill.
To win the hand.
Yes, and then had a three-way.
Yeah, and then just to win the hand for the knight, right. The ambassadress of Trilingua.
Cunnis Linguist 5.
Yeah. her name was Don Juana Andrasmi.
my other pet peeve, because I can't have too much baggage, is whenever they did illustrated versions of Spock, they just desperately wanted to make him green.
Yes. Super.
I mean, I know he's referred to as green, and he has that kind of lime tinge going on.
Lime tinge was our fifth album.
That's right. But in the comic and the cartoons, they just want to make him. They don't know how to handle the fact that they can't make him look like all the other humans. So do they go with Olive? Do they go with,
Well, how are people going to know that he was an alien if it wasn't for his weird ears and eyebrows that would obviously give it away?
So, when in doubt, just make him extra green. It was like, do we go with the Martian Manhunter green? Do we go with...
What in our forest palette do we make Spock?
That was our sixth album. That was
Forest Palette.
Forest Palette. So, no, yeah, I'm with you on that. I absolutely agree. But that my thing is, you had this movie that from what I understand, upon release, you know, it made a fair amount of money. Like it carried the Star Trek name. So you know, but it didn't exactly get the best reception.
Yeah,
in the world.
Wasn't that great.
Right, because it had that Galactus Nebulous Fantastic Four monster, you know, guy in it. It was a little rough around the edges.
It wanted to be Battlestar Galactica, and it wasn't.
But then go on to make 18 more issues of a comic book based on those characters. Seems like a rough start for this.
Too cerebral. But also, you have to bear in mind, though, that this is also a period where studios were licensing things out to comics and being real sticklers about stuff. For Star Wars, between Empire and Jedi, they couldn't even mention the Jedi in the comics. John Byrne wrote two wonderful... the first two issues of The Adventures of Indiana Jones.
Okay.
You went about the third issue, like, what the hell? It's a whole different writer, whole different artist, dull as dishwater. Because after those first two issues, in meetings with the Lucasfilm representatives, they were like, you know, they were reviewing scripts that he had written and saying, well, you know, you're not showing what they're talking about. It's like people know what they're talking about. It's like, you know, did you have a scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark showing Indy not paying attention in church? You don't have to illustrate every single thing you mention in passing.
Right.
And it was literally that sort of thing.
At the same time as the Marvel comics were being released, something really cool, another Star Trek milestone, in my opinion, more important than the Marvel comics of the time, hit. And that was in 79, McDonald's released its first Happy Meal. And it was a Star Trek The Motion Picture Happy Meal with Star Trek comic strips in it. And it had little tiny communicator toys. That's awesome.
That is awesome.
I had
that
no
That is idea. Awesome.
Yeah. So the first
of all the weird, obscure, useless pieces of crap that I don't have already... I would like to have one of those.
I would too. To be completely honest, to have a, you know, the first ever McDonald's Happy Meal toy, Star Trek the Motion Picture communicator, and comic strip would be kind of cool. Like,
yeah,
that would be kind of cool to have.
And there's a hoarder in Minnesota that has one of those. I just gotta find him.
I still love the and I don't want to like name name drop here, but the guy that when I was in Phoenix came into the store I was working in at the time, and I was talking to him, and he said, "Yeah, I used to be a props master for the original Star Trek series," and we got to talk.
Oh, wow!
And he showed up what 2 weeks later, him and his wife with three of the original panels from the Enterprise, and he just gave them to us.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I've got them framed and mounted, hanging on my wall, and his wife's like. And I was like, I can't take this. You know, this is crazy. And she's like, no, you can. We have a garage full of this shit. You can take this, and we might bring you more. So
you still know him?
I wish I did. He was a really cool guy, and I really wish that I would have been able to keep in touch with him, because he would have been a great guest for, you know, one show or another, and he was a nice guy.
Oh, yes.
Just one in particular, yeah.
Yeah, but but moving into the realm of DC, now it gets interesting, because now the reins are off. It's 84, you know, Free Love, Acid's in the Air, Timothy Leary. No, okay, wrong time period?
Fine. Wrong era, yeah. Whatever. Close enough.
Whatever, Cole. Always fact-checking me, telling me what I can.
Yeah.
Can
gotta keep you in line.
So they ran after... they kind of did the Marvel movie thing where they ran after the Wrath of Khan and you know, search for Spock. There was a great, highly acclaimed run of the Mirror Universe saga was included in this run, as well as Who Killed Captain Kirk. They did movie specials. They did a Who's Who in Star Trek, Cole.
Oh, that's right. They sure did. And also it was during the DC era that you got, I mean, they pretty much, I think Paramount had loosened the reins considerably, because they got to do all kinds of things. There was the trial of Captain Kirk was a memorable arc. It was about a two or three issue arc where Kirk was put on trial for pretty much every single transgression of the Prime Directive from the entire series.
The first panel's just like the judge going, can you recite the Prime Directive? And Kirk's like, oh,
we the people,
beef patties, special sauce.
<That's right. laughs> Well, the fun thing was in that, what they did as part of the trial, one of the witnesses was from the Peace of the Action Planet.
Okay.
Where the concern was that a communicator had been left behind, and from that they can extrapolate.
Yeah, they retro engineered the technology.
Well, the fear was that they would, being imitative peoples, they would retro. Yeah, like you say, they'd retro engineer and figure out how to make their own fancy heaters.
Mm-hmm.
And so they bring the representative in. It may have been Bella Oxmix or JoJo Krakow, for all I know, or all I remember anymore. But the essentially, they bring him in, he does his testimony, and as he's leaving, he tosses Kirk the communicators, "You left this thing behind." And it was such a brilliant conceit to that one line, and suggested ad hoc that they didn't bother, you know, that didn't make any sense to them. Tommy guns made sense to them.
Right, so, right. Like, so they didn't care. Weapons. What was this stupid thing?
Yeah, and it was really cool because it brought back a lot of fun stuff. They also brought back Harry Mudd.
Yes, yes, they did. It was and, This Is Your Life of...
I think it was that issue or the story arc was Emperor Mudd, which was a really clever idea as well.
Yeah.
But they had a lot of fun with, you know, making the nods to the original series without trying to rewrite the original series or... But they didn't just excise it. And a lot of times what happens in a licensed title is everything else gets ignored, and it ceases to really represent or be recognizable for the source material.
Right. Right.
It's like, oh, that was Star Trek, but this is our Star Trek. It's like, no. It's not how that works.
Well, and they do a, you know, and the comics now are so all over the place, and we'll get to those, but you have the combination of, you know, Shatner's Kirk alongside of Pine's Kirk with a little dash of Avery Sisko in there, and you know, so they're all over the place. They're just there is no continuity anymore in this. They've just decided hell's bells, you know, damn the torpedoes. We're gonna do whatever we want now, and we're gonna make awesome, you know, awesome stories. But yeah, DC had a really good run all the way up to 88, and that's when they took over with pretty much the Next Generation stuff. Is right at the end of 88 when they went into 89 with a couple of the original series. And then, you know, you get your Final Frontier, your Undiscovered Country, and Generations movie specials. But then they jump straight into Next Generation right after that.
Exactly, yeah.
Which, you know, is pretty awesome. But
well, I mean, it's understandable, though. I mean, because the TV series have messed with them themselves. I mean, they you got all this stuff established in Next Generation, and then Enterprise came along, and it's like, oh, you think that was the first appearance of these? No, they actually
remember when they never encountered.
Like, can't you have an original idea? I mean, at least you know, does it have to be the Ferengi? Can't it be something else?
It has to be the Ferengi.
Yeah, it's remember that? Remember Next Generation when they said no humans had ever encountered the Ferengi? Oh, well, they forgot they'd actually in a ship by the same name.
Yeah.
Here is the irony.
I mean, they were pulling the same stuff. I mean, in the classic series, you had a good excuse because it was all new, doing this stuff for the first time. But by the time Enterprise come along, they should have known better.
I always thought that they were going to take Enterprise like out of continuity in the sense that they would somehow break it off as another kind of, I guess, lane in the, I don't want to call it the multiverse, but in their, you know, in their time stream, like, oh, well,
that's what they should have done. That's what they should have done. And I'm really glad, and oh, forgive me for saying this, but I'm really glad that Abrams just made this, his run, just an entire, it's just an alternate timeline, just an alternate universe. And because if you don't do an alternate universe, nothing is a surprise.
Right.
Yeah, and it also, you're beholden to so much that forever, like you say, nothing can be a surprise.
Right. Well, you mean you blow up Vulcan? Well, Magic 8-Ball didn't see that one coming.
Well, the other
and
thing.
So, but it really drives home the fact that nothing is going to be as you predict it to be, and so you can enjoy it again with just a whole new recipe.
Well, and I think that Abrams did a magical thing that we don't see enough when this type of thing happens. Which is, he brought in Nimoy to look down the barrel of the camera and say, hey, listen, buddy, everything's fine. Everything that you love is still the thing you love. This is something different. I'm going to climb in this pod and get fired out into the universe now. Bye.
Like, that was... and just in case that wasn't enough, when they had Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto on Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And then Nimoy walks in. Right. And the audience is just going bananas. And he has the talk with them about the upcoming new movie franchise. And they ask, well, do you think that fans will like it? And he says, of course they do. If not, they're like, it wouldn't be logical. You know, what you say, if not, they would be dickheads. And to hear those words from Leonard Nimoy, if you needed any more reason to love the man than you already had, it was like, God bless you for that line.
Oh, yeah.
I think that they've done, you know, and not to veer too far away from the comics, but I think that they've done justice and deference to the original series and Next Generation, you know, in all the iterations with the new, you know, and I'm curious to see what this new show is going to do, because I believe...
Me too.
Is the new show in that universe, or is it in
Yes, it is. Okay. The Klingons that I've seen cemented that.
Okay.
They're in the current movie universe.
That's brilliant. That
makes sense. Yes, absolutely. It makes perfect sense.
But it's delightful that this is Hey Kids Comics, because what J.J. Abrams did with the new series of Star Trek is what comics have done to classic heroes over and over and over again. Count on your hand, or two or three your hands, how many times Superman has been revamped, rewritten, revisited. Batman has gone from goofy to horrifically dark to just batshit crazy and everything in between, and you have at least 10 or 12 different versions of the same hero, and it's all cool, because you know what, it's fantasy,
right?
And so that's what comics have taught me.
and it hadn't dawned on me, but you're absolutely correct. We don't see a lot of retconning in this way in big giant, like Star Wars would never go,
oh yeah,
okay,
yeah,
we're rebooting New Hope. This is, you know, this is the new Luke Skywalker.
That's right.
But they did it, and they did it really well, and they gave us an updated version of, and I'm not saying that Star Wars needs to be updated. I think it holds up really well. But we never got the first 5 years, or, you know, that first initial push into the universe in movie form. We got the first movie based on the TV show after the fact. So this, you know, the fact that it opens up with Kirk stealing a car and driving it towards a ravine, listening to the Beastie Boys in the future, tells you everything you need to know about what you're about to get. And they did a great job with that.
Yeah, take that, nature versus nurture,
That's right. Moving on, after the DC days, we go into my favorite. And this is not, and I've been over this, I've gone on the mat so many times with this, and fought people at every turn. My favorite iteration of Star Trek, Deep Space Nine. I love me some Deep Space Nine. I love
it.
I love Odo. I love Kira. I love Avery, as crazy, as batshit crazy as he might be. I'm going to sit behind the piano and give this interview like a whack job. I love Quark. I love it's
Cheers, Love Boat, and Fantasy Island.
Thank you. That's a really good and
with mixed, that was like the entire Thursday night lineup.
Yeah,
that's right.
And if you got nasty in a couple episodes, Battlestar Galactica. But but that was my favorite. Malibu got the rights to all of it. They got the rights to the original series, or no, they actually didn't. Concurrent with DC's license for the original series and Next Gen, this is how weird licensing is. They're all owned by Paramount, but DC had the license for the original series and the Next Generation. Malibu got the rights for Deep Space Nine and Voyager. Now, they pushed out a bunch of Deep Space Nine, 32 issues and a couple annuals. They never got to do Voyager because right as they were getting ready to publish Voyager, Marvel bought them.
That's
They never got to release Voyager, which is a shame, because I need more. I needed more green for $2 ears. But did you ever see that? It was on Upright Citizens Brigade. So it had, you know, all of, you know, Lennon and all of those Amy Poehler and all those UCB people in it on their show that was used to be on Comedy Central. And there was just one where this guy just kept saying, "I need more green for $2 ears," and I don't know why. But I've never, 15 years later, 20 years later, I can't get it out of my head. But they introduced a lot of really interesting things. They had a huge crossover called the Landmark Crossover, and I remember reading this. The Landmark Crossover was Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and it was pretty cool. They had some really interesting things where the first and last issue were published by DC, and the two in the middle were published by Malibu, which is interesting. I don't think you would see that now in a cross company.
That's crossover. Right. I'd forgotten about that part.
Yeah, but that was what we got there. I don't think we ever got. Okay, we got some Voyager, in when Marvel bought Malibu and took the reins back for a lot of the comics. They did Untold Voyages. They did Star Trek Unlimited. I don't know if you ever remember Star Trek Unlimited, Cole.
Gosh, that does not ring terribly familiar.
That's what they were doing. Do you remember when they were doing all the Unlimited lines? They had like Spider-Man Unlimited.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I follow.
But Star Trek Unlimited they had some really interesting issues of the comics back then. They kind of were just like all in on pretty just being nuts, just being crazy at that point. Just who cares? We're gonna do it up.
Whatever we want.
Yeah. There was some really interesting, cool books in there, and I'm running through these because I want to get to some of the other stuff that they did. Some of the big cool things that they did. In terms of crossovers, which I don't know if you, Cole, are you familiar with very many of the crossovers that they did?
I know there was some crazy tonnage. Both Marvel and DC did some bizarre-ass crossover stuff.
Just a quick question. Is this the same period of time when they were doing all the amalgam stuff?
Yeah.
But it was also the period where a lot of your indie publishers were buying the rights to everything they could lay their hands on.
Right.
So that they could have, you know, RoboCop, Terminator.
Yeah.
You know, Dark Horse's Aliens versus Predator, which was the originator of that craze.
Yeah.
Was the, you know, that basically was, it just touched off a firestorm of versus
and Punisher crossovers. Versus the Mighty Ducks, or
oh god damn, I want to read that so bad. I want Emilio Estevez to say V formation and then Punisher just cut them all down.
Oh, that makes me happy.
No, they did Untold Voyages, they did Unlimited, they did DS9, they did some Voyager, which is awesome. They did early Voyages because Marvel got creative and they said, okay, we can't do, you know, the original series and we can't do Next Generation. So let's take it back to Pike. Nobody told Pike
that's
stories.
Right.
Yeah, so they took it back
to Pike.
Nobody
gives a rat's ass about him. So we will.
That's right. And they did Starfleet Academy, which was basically like the New Mutants of Star Trek.
So when they went back to Pike, did they have Spock when he was still on antidepressants? And
wow,
yes, I'm sure they did. That's hilarious.
Well, there was some other neat things that I think. Who was publishing by the time? I should probably rein this back until we get there. The relaunch. Was it IDW by then?
Wildstorm, I think.
Oh, that's right. Because one of the really cool things, talking about crossovers, that by the time Wildstorm had them, they actually published a miniseries that took place before or revolved around the storyline of the first Abrams Star Trek that gave you the story of the Romulans.
Yes, yes.
The Romulan miners, and it tied up a lot of loose ends.
Yeah.
And was a wonderful companion to the film.
Yeah.
But, you know, during the height of the crossovers, there have been Doctor Who has met the crew of the Enterprise, Green Lantern.
Well, the Green Lantern one I want to get into, but we definitely have Doctor Who. We definitely have we have a bunch of the Star Trek meets Star Trek type crossovers, right? We have, Catherine, are you ready for this one?
Okay.
You might have to go out and buy this. You have the crossover that was Star Trek meets Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
And it was called, The Primate Directive.
No, it wasn't.
Yes.
Oh, yes. My gosh.
Oh, yes.
That is not right.
Get this for a... so it was four issues, and get this for a synopsis, all right?
Okay.
Kirk and his crew must team up with Taylor and Dr. Zaius to defeat a guerrilla military coup that is being backed by Klingon forces.
Oh,
who
my.
Who the hell wouldn't want... I want to read it right now.
No. And there was a Star Trek X-Men.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Brilliant.
Really?
Yes.
It brought in the spacefaring aspects of the X-Men with the Shi'ar Empire. There was a... Marvel did some other Star Trek where they had the...
I have a difficult time with that. I have a difficult time with that. Because
got assimilated?
Yeah. Catherine, what was that? You have a difficult time with what?
I have a difficult time with the crossover with the Marvel Universe.
Nice.
Of course, I'm sure no one asked me, but Star Trek is science-based and Marvel is magic-based.
No, it's not entirely magic-based. Marvel has everything based.
There's no magic in the Star Wars universe.
Well,
it's all technology.
So here's the thing about... So when we're talking about the crossover that happened with Marvel, essentially what happens is the Shi'ar Empire, which is a spacefaring group of people, not that different than, let's say, the I would probably compare them in some respects to Romulans, probably.
Okay.
Warlike race.
And science-based.
But
okay.
they punch through... they basically punch through dimensions and end up with... You know, if we're functioning under the assumption that all dimensions exist, that our dimension exists in the Marvel Universe somewhere on you know, in Earth... 27821 5769, you know, then that dimension exists too. So they punch through into the dimension and go and end up I believe it was Proteus in the first one that
wreaked
havoc. But the cool thing about it is not only do you get to see Spock give Wolverine a Vulcan neck pinch and take him out, which is friggin' cool.
That's right. Worth it, also mission right there.
That's right. You get to see Cyclops and Kirk running around together, which I imagine that Cyclops, the comic book version of Cyclops, probably his cadence is probably a lot Kirky. It's very Kirky, I imagine, when I read the comic. You get like in the Next Generation one, it was all Kang the Conqueror. It was all time travel. But you get this idea that. You know, Wolverine and these guys say, and all, you know, basically the idea is that all of the time travel they've done, all of the, you know, all of the possible futures they've witnessed, your Ages of Apocalypse, your Days of Future Pasts, your Houses of whatever they had been through at that point.
Yeah.
They said, it's great that we have finally experienced one that's based on hope and not on fear, which is something that Star Trek absolutely does. It's
yes
the idea is Roddenberry's vision of hope
in
the future, which is something, completely honestly, the comic books drastically lack. So it's nice to have that little bit of hope injection into comic books however you cut it, but they've
yeah
they, they had run-ins with the Legion of Superheroes twice.
Well, in fact, the Legion of Superheroes, as we were talking about, I went casting about. I think back when we did our time travel episode, or a time travel episode, I remembered stumbling on a panel from a Star Trek crossover. Turned out it was Legion of Superheroes, and they go into this great big chamber, and there is every pop culture time travel apparatus that you could ever imagine. And I actually found it.
Did you?
I found the panel, and someone has annotated it.
I remember that. We talked about that on the show, I think, all the different versions of time travel equipment.
Yeah, and some of them I didn't recognize, but someone actually annotated this one. It has Bill and Ted's phone booth.
Okay.
The hot tub time machine. Uh-huh. It's got that time pod that the Matt Frayer or whatever, the Max Headroom guy,
okay,
was on Star Trek The Next Generation, had that weird shape time pod.
You got your city on the edge of Forever Loop, I'm sure, and the Stargate.
No, oddly enough, the Stargate's there, the time tunnel.
Nice.
Uh-huh.
Is there the time machine from both George Powell's time machine and the time machine from Time After Time with
Time After Time.
Version. Yeah.
Steam version.
That's right. The time sled from Time Cop.
Oh, wow.
The DeLorean, the Dagger of Time from Prince of Persia, for God's sake. The Cosmic Treadmill from Flash.
But no City on the Edge of Forever Loop?
Not in this
wow.
Election.
See, that was always my number one, the hell. Because, you know, granted, everybody was writing different versions of reality in the classic series. How can you just leave that out there?
Well, everybody left, and there was a fire, and they thought everything got destroyed.
It's a
what?
You know,
what?
And then there's the trial of Kirk.
Yeah.
Listen, he's fixing things, all right? He's out there fixing things.
I think that the City on the Edge of Forever Loop just is probably obscured in the collection. They just didn't get it.
So I want to get Catherine this Green Lantern...
Yes.
Star Trek.
Yeah,
I want to actually find it for you and get it for you because it look. I remember reading a couple issues of it. Now this is recent. This is really recent. But I remember reading a couple issues of it, just you know, in passing, not buying it. But now that I'm like, I actually did the research on it. I kind of mm-hmm. want to get it because what happens is they, again, you know, I'm not going to go through the mental gymnastic it takes to get them into the same universe, but
yeah.
It was right after the War of the Light, which at that point we had all of the different kind of teams, the color teams, where you had the greens and the yellows and the oranges and the, but everybody, it was right after that, there were a whole bunch of rings out there floating around in space, trying to find new hosts.
Okay.
The Enterprise is sucked into the DC universe. The rings, in proximity to these rings, the rings lock on to various members of the Enterprise, and and they become lanterns. So, you don't have a Green Lantern, but you do get a Blue Lantern in the form of Chekhov. You get an Indigo in the form of McCoy.
Okay.
You get... the Violet Ring, the Star Sapphire goes to Uhura. Now this is keep in mind this is Abramsverse, right? So we're not getting Jimmy Doohan running around in a Green Lantern costume, unfortunately. I'm going to have that commissioned.
Branch, have him fighting alligators.
Branch, if you're listening, I want Doohan as a Green Lantern. But the really interesting is that the Yellow Lantern goes to General Chang, if you remember it, Star Trek Into Darkness.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Then the Red Ring goes to a Gorn. So one of the Gorn end up with a Red Ring.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the orange ring goes to...
Because haters gotta hate.
That's right. the Red Ring ends up at, in the hands of one of the Praetor Dectus Romulan that wants to take over, you know, the void left in Vulcan after it's been destroyed. But then, you know, it goes through the whole scenario of, you know, these fights and what they do. And the cool thing about it is you get these really great depictions. Like, there's one panel where it's the Enterprise, but it's the kind of the normal size Enterprise. But then there's that Green Lantern solid light structure that makes it ginormous around it. like 10 times the size of the Enterprise. You know, you get these really cool ideas of what it would be like to have these guys as Green Lanterns, because they were just thrust into this thing to fight alongside of the existing Green Lanterns. It's really cool. Like, I don't know. I really like it. It looks really, really interesting. I'm going to have to pick it up and read it just because I want to see Bones. I want to see Carl Urban's Bones as a, as a compassionate Indigo Lantern, which is a great play on the fact that, because the rings read, you know, the rings read your true emotional state. So, you know, he's always the crotchety, curmudgeonly, you know, whether it's, oh damn it. Why can't I think of the name? The name of the actor that played Bones in the original series. I've lost it.
Oh, DeForest Kelly.
Thank you. DeForest Kelly. Or Carl Urban, they've always played that, but they always had that, you always knew that they had that, you know, they always played that, you know, that was their actor's secret, was they're the most compassionate person on the Starship Enterprise, even though they were the, you know, they had to be an asshole on the surface, so. Yeah, I want to get this. Cole, do you have anything to add to this show? Because we have blown through a show.
We have indeed. I did notice that apparently there's a fairly recent Return to the Mirror Universe a la Next Generation.
Oh, really?
Where Data is like Borg android guy and Picard sporting the requisite Mirror Universe goatee.
Oh, the half shirt where he's got like the harness on, that one?
Yeah, well, he's got like the Federation wife beater.
Yes. The Larry the Transporter guy garb.
Larry the Transporter guy, damn you. I do want to touch on some highlights of Star Trek and comics that I've personally encountered.
Yes, please.
Where it literally took a story, they crafted a story that took place in the original classic Trek era.
Okay.
And then how it it comes back to haunt, as it were, in the Next Generation era.
That's cool.
The two generations beautifully together. And I'm sorry, when I was looking around for covers and stuff, I found a meme that someone had put together with Cole Sear from The Sixth Sense.
Yes.
looking up from under the covers above a picture of a bunch of like six or eight red shirts, and it says, "I see dead people." No. damn it. But there was also a couple of others. Steve McCauley's been on the show many times, so we wanted to try to get on this one because he's probably more steeped in the comics than any of us. I believe it was IDW had a Dr. McCoy comic.
Yes, yes. We talked about that before when on Collector Sector. The Dr. McCoy, was it Frontier Doctor or something like that?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, Frontier Doctor. And it's just little, you know, each individual issue was a different vignette. And the very first issue, it was by John Byrne.
Oh, thank God.
And it's almost like you get a taste of what the Indiana Jones might have been like if he wasn't so stymied by the studio. But like the very first issue takes place before the motion picture.
The first motion picture or?
Yeah. So it's him in private practice with his full beard. Nice. And I thought, what a wonderful idea. No wonder he was so bitchy about getting pulled back into service.
Yeah, it takes a while to grow a really good beard.
Yeah, so what a brilliant way to do that. And then the other thing, one other that I want to talk about, I'm racking my brain. I may have to step away for a second, go over and look at my bookshelf. But it was a it took place in the movie, in the cinematic era. And the whale, the cetacean expert from Voyage Home.
Okay.
She and Kirk are like shacking up on the high seas for a little while he's taking shore leave. And she's out on her, like, you know, hover boat, you know, running herd on George and Gracie and their kid. And I don't know if she's calved yet or not in the story. But it, you know, it's got...
The whale or the other gal?
Whoa, wow.
Thank you. Good. I like that.
Yeah, in fact, discuss Star Trek amongst yourselves, because it's going to bug me if I don't remember what the hell the name of that... oh, crap. I'll be right back.
No, the Frontier Doctor thing was really interesting because it's like he said, it's all one shots, but they're all like, you know, adventures.
That's cool. And yeah. I think it would be an interesting study on that character of, you know, how a character is when he's not at work, right. When he's on his own, you know, not having to answer to anybody but himself.
Well, he puts together, like, basically a team of field medics and goes from place to place where he's needed and helps people. There's a lot of them where he goes to different starships solves mysteries. And fights people with his, you know, like hard traveling doctors. Like he's kind of, you know, the what is it, the 27th century? What century is it in?
23rd century? Yeah.
Is he the 23rd century's Dr. Quinn medicine woman at that point? Did you find what you were looking for, Cole?
I couldn't find my copy of it. I'm not sure which shelf it's on, but I was hoping I might stumble on it here. But it's good night. What was the name of that thing?
Well, so as we're getting ready to wrap up, Catherine, I do have a question for you.
Okay.
Being steeped in Star Trek lore as you are, mm-hmm. Is there anything that you would like to see explored in the comics at this point that maybe they haven't, or maybe you don't think has gotten enough coverage that it hasn't, you know, reached the control center where you know it's out there for you to check out?
I would like to see maybe a series of one shots about more about what brought certain characters to Starfleet Academy in the first place.
Okay.
Nice.
Like, for example, why did Uhura join in the first place? And what was it that motivated her? What was it that she wanted to do versus what she ended up doing? And I'd also like to see it kind of realistically envisioned like that, because when you go to college, probably 9 times out of 10, what you think you're going to be doing on the flip side of that is totally different. And I'd like to see the classic cast explored. I mean, we've seen, you know, what brought Kirk to that point, and right. We've seen, you know, we saw Spock get beat up at school, but the rest of them, what about Scotty? I mean, Scotty's a freaking genius.
Sure.
And they keep him in the basement, and he just gets all of his buddies get blowed up. He keeps having to replace staff because you know, it's like there's always fatalities down in engineering. And it's like, crap, I just got him trained on that big old machine. And, you know, the bolt went straight through his head.
No, you're right. Because Chekhov, both series, both iterations of Chekhov have this weird Doogie Howser thing going that I never quite understood.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'd like to hear his story and even Rand, you know, when she was You know, maybe she started out as an ad man at the space parts place and answered an
space
ad.
Space parts.
Who knows? Who knows? She may have been. Maybe she wanted to be a cosmetologist or something like that, and it's like, oh, I'll do this.
I'm gonna say this right now before we close this up and they.
Oh, I did actually find, by the way, Star Trek: Debt of Honor.
Ooh. Okay.
Highly recommend, because it brings not only kind of a lot of the flavor of the Star Trek films, as well as just actual direct tie-in. It brings in characters like Riley is a captain.
Okay.
Who was the one who, apparently did that all too frequent thing of taking over the entire Enterprise from engineering.
Right.
So he could sing Iris songs one more time.
That's cool. Like,
yeah, what? There's like all kinds of nods. Even the character that was the left behind to be the envoy to Baylock, the creepy young Clint Howard.
Yes, I told you we were going to get to Clint Howard. I told the internet we were going to get to Clint Howard tonight. I'm glad that we did.
So it's really cool because it draws very heavily and it brings in your classic Klingons, like it's not Koloff, the other one. In their original form. And it even sort of posits the idea that, you know, not all the Klingons are lobster heads.
Well, didn't they say that that was some sort of weird mutagenic disease that affected their race or something at some point?
Early on, the explanation was that the original Klingons were the species that were in power at the time, and then the lobster heads over, which I thought was the best explanation.
That's a really good explanation.
But then by Next Generation, they got all the surviving Klingon actors to appear in, I think it was an episode of Deep Space Nine.
It was a wonderful episode.
Great to see all those guys again. But, you know, because of things, they had to make them all lobster heads.
Here's my thing, right? Marvel owned the rights to Star Trek 95 to 98. DC owned the rights to Star Trek, you know, 89 to 95. At any point, and this is probably going to be a 93, 94 thing, they really dropped the ball not having a mirror four-issue story arc special edition where each of them featured Kirk, Spock, Chekhov, Sulu, with lenticular covers, where the first cover was OTS, and as you moved it, it became the mirror version. So
nice.
The goatee would appear. Drop the ball, guys. Get on it. They're coming. All those damn variants are coming back around. So,
oh
man,
Cole, you still have the color forms options where you can put the beard and the sashes on them.
You can. Well,
and the thing is that the color forms option has been invoked in comics. There was an Action Comics or a Superman or one of the four titles.
Oh, Superman.
That had thing. Yeah, it was Superman versus Lobo. And there were all these actual little color forms pieces that you could put on the cover in whatever arrangement you desired and peel them right off.
That's too much power for me. That's too much. I don't want that kind of power.
I think we still own one or two that are unopened. And in a completely unrelated irony, I was over at a comic shop over the weekend, and the first printing of The Killing Joke was in their display case at $100. I'm like,
wow.
I've got multiple copies of the first print.
Cole, you're sitting on a gold mine. You just don't know it yet. That's what it is.
I mean, I doubt they'll ever get anyone to pay them $100 for it, but I would be happy for somebody to pay me $50.
All right. Why don't we get plugged up and get out of here? Cole, Catherine, you're awesome.
Thank you for joining us.
This again. Let me flash back to an hour and 15 minutes ago when Catherine was like, I don't know what I can bring to the table on this one besides, you know, everything about star dates, all the shows, the actors, real crucial plot points, everything that you guys didn't know when you came in here, you mouth breathing knuckle dragon asshole.
That's right. And a very thoughtful answer to your query about what would be cool to see in the comics that doesn't require a lenticular cover.
Oh, I still like to see a lenticular cover.
Yeah, that's the lenticular cover I can get behind. So thank you, Catherine. As always, you brought poise and a Jackie Onassis level of decorum to colonize Abbott and Costello routine that we do every week.
That's right.
I love you guys.
So, all right. Why don't you plug us up, Cole, and we'll get out of here.
Naturally. Well, you're coming... we're coming to you, of course, from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at JCUmail@yahoo.com. I'm sorry, Jedi Cole universe, JediCole.com, JediCole@yahoo.com, at the Jedi Cole U on Twitter. Be sure and check out Hey Kids Comics on the Instagram.
Yep.
And Andy's in charge of that one. Also, if you're really keen on more stuff that I'm up to, check me and Eddie Medina out on DallasOnAir.com on the first and third Sundays of every month from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. our new time for the Rancor Pit Live if you like the Star Wars. And hey, if you're into like Bigfoot and mysterious incidences and myths and legends and urban legends and all that kind of stuff and ghosts and goblins, well, mostly ghosts. Check out Eddie and his wife Colleen's new show, Figments, which is on the first Sunday of every month, 9:30 to 10:30, right before Rancor. And my new show, the more important one, of course, because it's mine, our playful rivalry plays on. Check out Isle of Toys, my brand new live show, which is 9:30, 10:30 on the third Sunday of every month. Second episode coming up a week from this Sunday. And where we'll be exploring the rise of the action figure in an episode that can only be called They Are Not Dolls.
That's right. Damn it. Damn it. Dad. A sweet little boots production.
And yes, on the next episode, you'll be able to see the second unboxing of the Marvel Legends Marvel Knights figures.
Again.
Who knows what may be awaiting us there? I'm
desperately want to, you know how Catherine and Cole, you guys will know the answer to this. What was the name of the TV production company that had the guy at the typewriter at the end? Where it would roll, you know, after the episode was over, it would be that.
Oh,
you know,
yes. It was like
and then the paper would float down. What was the, I can't remember.
Somebody, Sorrell or something like that? Or am I thinking Buddy Sorrell from Dick Van Dyke?
I want to do one of those for Sweet Little Boots Productions and plug it into the back of that thing. I'm never going to live that down, and that's fine.
No, you're not. I'll be sure of that. And yeah, so if you like some Sweet Little Boots, be sure and check out the segment on Isle of Toys, The Legends of Andrew Farmer.
Oh my God. Guys, this has been amazing. Catherine, again, you're nothing but astounding every time.
Oh, thank you. I had fun.
In fact, this is part of a trifecta of fun shows, fun issues of this show that are deeply personal, fun little things, you know, just for individuals. This one really was for Catherine, the Star Trek.
Yay!
Really wanted her to be on this. Next week, we have the full Bronte, where we talk about one of my favorite topics, which is, of course, dinosaurs, and the dinosaurs and dinosaur themes in comics, even the things that didn't take, you're like, oh, you already did that. No, we didn't. We talked about the age of dinosaurs, but we're going to talk about dinosaurs no matter when they cropped up.
No matter when they were devil dinosaurs and Sauron.
Or future dinosaurs with cars and shit.
That's right.
Right. And finally, a dino car.
How do you lease a car if you're a dinosaur?
I don't know, but we'll find
it.
Out.
With a driver's license, of course.
And finally, a week after next, we're going to get the great Eddie Medina back on the show for I Like Turtles.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
And we are going to delve really deep into the world of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Well, I just want to thank everybody out there listening and everybody that's, you know, guesting on the shows, because you guys are our regular guests. Like I said about, you guys are much like Star Trek in the sense that you're like Rotel. And we can open up a can and dump it into the cheese and mix it up, and it makes everything better.
Everybody's happy. So
as we pack this up into the... into the rocket, and Zephyr Cochran fires it into space only to get intercepted by the Vulcans, we just wanted to say thank you again, and join us next week when we once again get either, I can't even say we're going to get prehistoric, because we're going to get primeval. Yes.
Yeah, we're going to get primeval on your ass. Yes.
So say goodnight, everybody.
Can I do the wrap up thingy?
Yes, please. We haven't done it in a while, so
everybody, yeah. Everybody, collect, read, love, enjoy, share, swap, argue about, debate, and create comics.
That's damn, awesome. I'm going to cut that awesome. And put that into the end of every show. I really am. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
My teleporters. I don't know what's going on. I, this is why they don't use replicators. All right.
Good night. Chapter 8, full boots.